Thank you. Please be seated and welcome to the Court of Appeals. The first case on the calendar this morning is the case of Nathan Mead versus the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad Company. And Turi Lee? I understand there will be some sharing of arguments by respondent on a 2-minute, 13-minute split, and I'll address that when we get to you. Counsel for appellant may proceed. And when all counsel get to the podium, please identify yourselves for us, and please feel free to adjust the height of the podium.
Good morning. My name is Richard L. Carlson. I'm appearing on behalf of the appellant, Nathan Mead, who was the plaintiff below. We're seeking a review of whether the district court properly granted two motions that resulted in Mr. Mead's FELA case being dismissed. The first motion involved the exclusion of a liability expert witness, William Muzzy, and our medical causation expert, Dr. Scott Benson. The second motion was a motion for summary judgment. That was granted. The second motion then was a motion for summary judgment where the court held that the plaintiff could not make out a prima facie case of negligence without that expert testimony. Now, this is the second time we've been before this court, and in the first appeal, this court reversed summary judgment on the issue of whether there was sufficient evidence to establish foreseeability notice. And in that previous proceedings, the plaintiff, Mr. Mead, relied on the testimony and opinions of Mr. William Muzzy. It is our position, and in holding that the district court erred in granting summary judgment, where it held that there was insufficient evidence on the issue of foreseeability notice, this court specifically relied on Mr. Muzzy's opinion, and I'll paraphrase, but I believe the opinion said this: Mr. Muzzy's report alone is sufficient to raise this, a fact question for the jury. Now, on remand, Mr. Muzzy's opinions were attacked again under Rule 702. It's our position that under the law of the case doctrine that this court held in the first appeal that there was sufficient evidence raising an issue on foreseeability and notice, and then that finding, the court had to have determined that Mr. Muzzy's testimony was admissible under Rule 702. So that was a legal decision on a legal issue, and that it could not be reexamined on remand. And
that issue really before this court?
It was, Your Honor, and this is why I say that. Under Rule 56, it's clear that only admissible evidence can be considered under a summary judgment motion. So this to hold that this court in Mead 1 did not consider the admissibility of that evidence, that would turn Rule 56 really would put it in disarray. And this is what, so let's just assume that there was no issue, summary judgment was not granted in this after remand, but the court did hold that Mr. Muzzy's testimony was unreliable, inadmissible under Rule 702. Then we go to trial to argue that, and we would offer Mr. Muzzi's testimony based on the Court of Appeals decision that held that that alone, that testimony alone, was sufficient to raise a fact issue. But then that would be in conflict with the court, district court's finding that it was, that the testimony was unreliable. I think this is a case where it had, the court had to have determined or considered that issue, especially because BNSF considered, or excuse me, raised that issue in their first appeal.
It does seem like, to follow up on Judge Shellos's question, though, it does seem like the way our court teed it up in Mead as the issue pertaining to the second theory of negligence was that the district court held that that theory failed because notice and foreseeability of the malfunction could not be established. It seems like a slightly different issue than the question of the admissibility of the testimony. It seems like the issue was foreseeability.
It was, Your Honor. But those are the very same opinions that were attacked or raised on remand. The very same, and it goes to the issue is, was it foreseeable or did the railroad have notice that the seat would recline? And we argued, and
is it agreed that there is a pick that the seat was reclined after the accident? Is there any dispute about that?
I don't think that's disputed. There were photographs of that.
Our court seems to have taken that as a given.
Yeah, and I'm not going to speak for BNSF. I mean, they have great attorneys, so they may take a different. But I would submit that
the photos, grainy as they are, seem to show that.
I agree, and I do agree. But even if there is a dispute, that's a disputed issue that should be determined by a jury, not the court, whether, and I think there is sufficient evidence that shows that it reclined, it then went backwards with enough force that Mr. Mead's head broke out the back window.
Was there anything else in the record that suggested the injuries could have been caused in any other fashion?
I submit there isn't. But again, I'll let BNSF address that. But I think there's at least enough evidence on that issue that creates a jury question. Now, unless the court has any other questions about law of the case, I'm going to just move on with respect to the admissibility or whether our expert's testimony meet the 702 requirement. I want to make two things clear. Number one, we're relying on Mr. Muzzi for testimony as to foreseeability, notice that it would, that seat would recline, and we're offering Dr. Benson's opinions on medical causation. There is a little bit of a confusion, it seems like, or at least the court thought, well, you know, Dr. Benson, he's not qualified to testify to why the seat failed. We're not offering his evidence as to that. There's also,
his testimony connects, if it were to be received, the injury to the crash,
right,
and the dynamics of the crash after it happened.
And specifically, there was that initial negligent act of Mr. Lee hitting the back, but then that set in motion the seat collapsing, and there is evidence that Mr. Muzzi relied on that the force of that impact, the truck should have withstood if it was a properly maintained seat.
Wasn't the force like 11 miles an hour?
Right? I believe that's what it was, and they have a formula with the G's, and it's set out in our brief, and quite honestly, I don't follow the math, but I do know that our testimony was that, or the evidence is that impact was below. So then,
On the accident itself, I looked at the photos of the truck, and it really didn't seem like there was much damage to the truck because apparently it was sturdy and strong, and the damage would have been mostly to the other vehicle, I assume. But were there any other pictures of the other vehicle?
Not in the record. In this record, and I honestly can't tell you if there was photographs of that car, of the vehicle. I believe, and I don't know if this is in the record, I believe it was a Toyota or it was a smaller car. But again, I'm not, I don't know if that's in the record, and I'm not even sure if that fact is. But more to the point is that it set in motion the dynamics. And then that's where Dr. Benson comes in. And but getting back to just Mr. Muzzi, this is just a typical, I mean, almost like an accident reconstruction, or it is. You know, what do these experts look at? Number one, it doesn't involve any kind of novel scientific theory, so we're not worried about Frymac. Then what's the method that they use? They look at the evidence, they look at the physical evidence, statements, testimony, and whatnot, and then they apply, you know, their experience, knowledge, and whatnot, and come up with these opinions. And as pointed out, Mr. Muzzi is well-credentialed. He's written articles about the importance of having a rigid seat when you're involved in a collision. So, and there's a string cite in a reply that sets out, you know, this is typical. They're all federal court decisions, but, you know, these are experts that, you know, it's really straightforward. Method, there's nothing novel about the methodology or the underlying components. Then with respect to Dr. Benson, again, this is a straightforward case. It's not like GOBE where you have a complicated, whether exposure to a chemical cause injury. It's not like DOE where you have a case where there's a disputed scientific underlying theory with repressed or memory. This is a single, nor is it like the other case cited by the BNSF, and it's a FELA case. It was a cumulative trauma. I believe it was a carpal tunnel case. So you have, in those cases, complicated fact issues. Complicated, you know, there's not a single trauma, many traumas or exposure. This, you had a single trauma. You had the seat go collapse. You had our Mr. Meade's head hitting the back. You have stitches on the head, and then you have complaints within 10 days when he first saw Dr. Benson, giving a history of having headaches or neck pain with that collision. Then there is a question of whether Dr. Benson is qualified. He's a general practitioner. He oversaw the treatment. He's also a ringside doctor for the state of Minnesota. I did not know there were such people, but he's a doctor that attends fights and makes sure that if there's questions about concussion, head, or injury, just generally, where the
doesn't all that go to the weight, and they could call their own expert to say he's full of baloney.
Exactly, and that I agree, and that all goes to the weight. A lot of this, their arguments go to the weight. But my point is that he is experienced. He can provide that testimony, given his medical background, and is also supervising the medical treatment.
When you say provide that testimony, what testimony do you mean?
That's the testimony that said that the action of the collapsing of the seat, for whatever reason, and hitting the back, that was a contributing cause to Mr. Meade's injury. So that's our medical causation testimony. And so
it appeared he wasn't basing that, correct me if I'm wrong, he wasn't basing that on Mr. Muzzi's testimony. He was basing that on his patient's medical history.
You are right. He did not.
That's what doctors do all the time.
Right, and that gets, thank you. That gets to my point that he's a treating doctor. It's no different than a, you know, rear end case that happens all the time, or any collision. You got a treating doctor. He treats the patient. He oversees their treatment. He reviews their medical records. In this case, he's conferring with surgeons who perform surgery to both the neck and the shoulder. And then, based on his experience, training, and education, he forms an opinion.
But he can't testify about whether or not the seat mechanism failed or didn't fail.
Correct, and I agree with Your Honor, and we're not offering that, his testimony on that issue. We are offering Mr. Muzzi's testimony that...
The doctor's patient was in an accident.
Right, right.
The patient has injuries, and he can testify about the injuries.
That's it, yes, and thank you for clarifying that. I think, you know, and there is...
He can testify to the medical history where the patient said, my injuries occurred because
yes.
I hit the window in the back.
Yes, I agree. And there is some testimony about, or in cross-examination of him, he thought that the car was going 50 miles an hour, which is wrong. That would go towards the, you know, why there was a collapse, but it's undisputed that then the seat shot back. So unless the court has any questions, my time is up.
Would you like to go first? You're welcome to take your 2 minutes.
I wasn't sure how you wanted this to proceed. It doesn't matter to me.
Well, why don't you go ahead and take your 2 minutes, and we'll handle it that way. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Megan Cooper, and I represent Tour and Jerry Lee. Your Honors, I have very little to say here before you. This is regarding the notice of related appeal. We submitted our brief that this case should be dismissed because the notice of related appeal is unnecessary in this case because the order was not adverse to BNSF. I have very little to add. If Your Honors have inquiries for me, I'd be happy to address any questions you may have. My issue is not the main issue of this appeal, so.
We understand that. All right.
All right, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to have the remaining time?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
So Madam Clerk will assign the remaining time to Burlington Northern.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Alice Lochran. I represent BNSF. The appellee in this case. You've heard much this morning about Mr. Muzzi and law of the case. However, the admissibility of Mr. Muzzi's testimony and law of the case are not necessary for the resolution of the appeal. If you look at the court's order, the district court's order dismissing the case, it was on the basis that plaintiff was required to and failed to submit medical causation testimony. So the exclusion of Dr. Benson's testimony is the basis for this appeal.
Why isn't Dr. Benson's testimony admissible? I mean, I did tons of these cases as a trial court judge. This kind of testimony came in routinely.
Well, it depends, Your Honor, and I think the question is on what is he testifying? Is he testifying that there was, and this is the big dispute in this case, is whether the head injuries that happened were caused by the accident or were caused by a defective seat latch mechanism. So the question is Dr. Benson testifying to try to link the injuries to the failure of the leach seat back mechanism? And I understand now that he's not. But in the district court, he was offering, as I understand counsel was offering, that testimony. The district court found that that testimony was needed, that you needed somebody that showed that the failure of the latch mechanism caused additional injuries than what would have occurred anyway. And the district court, if you look on page 5 of the order,
if the plaintiff mm-hmm. tells the doctor that because I slid backwards into the window,
mm-hmm.
and if the latch had held, he wouldn't have slid backwards, why do you need anything more?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, the doctor it's not disputed the doctor didn't testify. The doctor did not analyze the forces.
Right.
And whether the seat latch mechanism failed or whether he rode up on the seat is the question. So you can ride up on the back of the seat, even if you have a good seat, and still hit your head. And that's the question that the district court was saying was missing. You didn't prove that these additional these injuries would have been added. There would have been created additional injuries by the fact that you had alleged seat mechanism failure.
But didn't the plaintiff's testimony establish that? He said he was basically flipped back and torpedoed out, didn't he?
The plaintiff's testimony did not. He could not provide, the plaintiff could not provide medical causation testimony. All he could testify was his.
Testify to what happened to him in the course of the accident.
Right, he could, but that's not the plaintiff doesn't have the knowledge of knowing whether he rode up on the seat, whether it would have made a difference anyway. So what the district court was saying is that you need to have somebody looking at the forces that when the back of the car got hit, plus you have the forces of a body inside the car. And what would have happened if you had a good seat? There's no testimony from Dr. Benson that he's able, at least, to testify to, and there's no testimony from Mr. Muzzy on that. So that's really what this...
You have the photo of the seat bent backwards.
Well, I think that it's partially reclined, and there is just... I think there was a question earlier by the court about whether, you know, whether we believe that the seat reclined as a result of the accident. I know that there was a statement in the prior opinion that we didn't dispute that or we had conceded that, and that's wrong. The question is whether he already had it. Our position is that he already had it in a reclined, partially reclined position. Now, that is a factual question because, as you know, the court notes that he had testified that it reclined in the accident.
Isn't so that enough? Oh. The jury believes it?
No, it's not enough because it doesn't provide the medical causation needed. You have to have some evidence of causation in this case, and it is a complicated case. It's not a simple case.
If it caused him to torpedo out of the seat and hit his head, and he said that's how it happened, and the doctor said that is a reasonable explanation for this injury, and I would opine that that's what caused the injury, why didn't he have it?
Again, because of the fact that it could be reclining, it could be sort of a rear end backwards. So he's going up backwards any for the forces. You have to have some expert testimony, and I didn't understand.
You've got the person who was there and experienced it.
But he doesn't provide any testimony that the seat latch mechanism increased his head injuries that would have occurred anyway.
So I want to know if I am understanding this correctly. Mm-hmm. If this were simply a negligence case against the other driver.
Right, a different situation.
You would not be arguing that the doctor's testimony was not admissible.
Correct.
So what this has to do, what this case is really about whether or not the seat mechanism failed or didn't fail, was defective or not defective. Am I right?
Well, I think that's where there is a dispute about that. I think what the basis for the dismissal was not that. The basis for the dismissal was that he didn't show that whether he had a good seat or a bad seat, that his injuries would have been increased, that the seat latch mechanism would have made any difference.
Well, I understand that that's with respect to the doctor's testimony, but... Mm-hmm. I mean, the first issue that the district court addressed was the expert testimony of Mr. Muzzy.
That was a non-final order, as what happened in the procedure was is that we had moved to exclude the testimony. Once the testimony from both was excluded, we moved to dismiss, and we moved to dismiss solely on the basis of Dr. Benson's testimony having been excluded, and therefore no medical causation testimony, which was needed, could be provided. So in other words, we didn't rely on Muzzy, and they didn't. The district court, if you look at the order dismissing, and that's the order before the court, it didn't rely on Muzzy at all. So in some ways, he's asking for an advisory opinion, because if he thinks he wants to go to trial, he's going to need Mr. Muzzy's testimony.
Well, I'm looking at the district court's order.
And the order, there's two orders, as the court recalls.
Yes.
If the courts are looking at the second order. And the court says, so the key part is on page 5. The court says, plaintiff's pretrial expert disclosures and his response to BNSF's motion to exclude expert testimony show that plaintiff intended to rely solely upon Dr. Benson to establish that the alleged seat latch mechanism failed. failure, not the accident itself, caused plaintiff's injuries. And then it goes on to say plaintiff does not disclose a biomechanical engineer to present an analysis of the forces plaintiff might have experienced as a result of the alleged seat mechanism failure as distinct from the rear end collision itself. And that's the basis for the appeal. Now, the excluded opinions from Mr. Muzzi did not provide that. The excluded, it's very careful, the court has to match what the excluded opinions were and the basis for the excluded opinions, because the bulk of the Muzzi testimony was excluded because Muzzi was trying to opine not necessarily on a defect, but that the defect was due to BNSF's negligence. And the district court said, well, you haven't provided any methodology, any foundational reliability to say that that maintenance on other parts of the car show that there was a defect or a maintenance problem with respect to the latch mechanism. And that was the bulk of it. And there's certainly, you know, even under a de novo standard, that is very reasonable. There's no reason to challenge that, particularly under the abuse of discretion standard. And the second opinion was the fact that the seat back had failed. Not that it would have made a difference on the injuries to his head, but the fact that the seat back failed. He excluded that because of the there was problems with the foundation of his investigation of the facts.
I understand that, but I have to admit I'm still a bit confused.
Okay.
This appeal is from two orders, correct?
No, what? Your Honor. This appeal, the final order dismissing this appeal. So he had an interlocutory order, which is an order that a court can decide at any time prior to trial. The parties were preparing for trial. BNSF moved to exclude those. After those have been excluded, we move to dismiss. So the Muzzi and the law of the case, in effect, is an advisory opinion. Yes, he wants it decided.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
How is this different from one of those serial back-end accidents that happens from time to time where there's one impact and then another impact from the next car and another impact from the next car? Does the plaintiff need a biomechanical engineer in those cases to identify which forces from which collision caused the injury?
Well, again, that's dealing with a different type of a negligence, and in some ways that is a sort of a garden variety negligence, where the negligence is of the back driver hitting. What he's trying to allege is that BNSF was negligent, and that its negligence caused, at least in part, his injuries.
Which is similar to the situation I've hypothesized, that is that the negligence of more than one person combines to cause injuries.
Well, I guess I'm not sure about how it plays out in your typical situation. I guess I would need more information. To be clear, I'm not understanding the question.
Well, that's just one example. There are countless cases where the negligence of the claimed negligence of two or more people combined to cause injury.
Right.
Does the plaintiff need, in those cases, to always call a biomechanical engineer to identify which particular injuries were caused by which particular person's negligence?
Okay, I think I understand the question now. And I think that it depends on the case. And if I can give an example, and this was provided in one of the cases cited by the plaintiff, I think it was in the reply brief, it was an Eastern District of New York case, a CSX case. CSX was the railroad. And in that case, it was a back injury. And the doctor had, the question is whether it was a pre-existing injury. And so there was another potentially cause. And the doctor had looked at the MRIs. And this was a treating doctor, as I understand it. And the treating doctor looked at the MRIs before the alleged accident and after. And that doctor, and this is what doctors normally do, is to look at MRIs, and the doctor could say, yes, there was a difference. There was an added injury by the time that accident or after that date. Here, though, we're dealing with forces in a car. We're dealing with something that's beyond the expertise of Dr. Benson. So, yes, we do need something more in this case to establish that the fact that the alleged defect in the seat back mechanism created additional injuries that would not have occurred anyway. So yes, in this case we do, not always in all cases. There are cases, and that's a classic example, and that's exactly what the doctor can do, which is to look at two MRIs and say, yes, before and after, those are different. Here, we're not dealing with two different medical causations.
A lot of us don't keep a, a benign MRI on hand just in case someone runs into us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I still think even in that circumstance, if a treating physician was able to provide about the medical history of that person, I think that it could be different. But here we're talking about, again, the forces of the car hitting the pickup truck and the person in the pickup truck and how of those forces would have made it different. He still has to show some causation, even in part. And what's missing here is evidence to show it in part. He's got to have some evidence.
But you're hypothesizing, aren't you, that even if the seat back hadn't failed, he still would have had same or similar results?
Well, our position is, yes, that he has to prove that.
Well, he has to prove what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And as Judge Kirk asked, he's apparently going to testify to what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a doctor who's going to say, based on that history and the symptoms and my examination, I conclude that what happened caused his current condition.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that enough?
Oh, I'm sorry. Could the court repeat it?
He's going to say what happened.
I'm sorry. What's confusing me is that he. Who was the?
The plaintiff.
Okay.
The plaintiff appellant is going to say what happened.
Right.
The doctor's going to say, I talked to him about what happened. I examined him. I made films. Whatever I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, as my expert opinion, the doctor, Dr. Benson, says what he says happened accounts for the injuries that I see here. So in my professional opinion, this caused this.
Well, I think that Dr. Benson, according to what the plaintiff's position is now, is going to testify that the injury is caused by hitting his head against the glass.
Right, which is what he says happened.
Right, okay. But the question is still whether the seat back mechanism created additional injuries.
Well, but that's intrinsic in his testimony because he testifies, yeah, without reclining it, then he says flat against the back of the vehicle, which more or less turned me into a human torpedo, which launched me out the back window. And if not, like I said, for the headache rack, who knows where I would have ended up.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, your body didn't leave the vehicle? And he said, I couldn't leave the vehicle. So what you're saying is I went all the way through the window and hit the metal case in back. Yeah.
Right, right. That is
that
a testimony.
That sounds like plenty for the doc's opinion here. I don't understand the issue.
Well, the issue is, how is it from a medical perspective? So we're talking about medical causation. How is it that the plaintiff can provide that testimony? How is he capable of testifying that it would have made any difference?
He's the one that experienced the G-forces, for crying in the beer, you know?
Right, Your Honor. So the question, though, is, so he didn't provide any testimony. He could have, I sort of keep going back to the same testimony and the same argument, and so I'm not sure that I'm answering the court's question, because the question is whether he could have ridden up anyway. So will you ride up on the back of the seat and hit your head?
Then he would have gone to the ceiling, not out the back window.
Well, it depends depends on how he set the seat. If he set the seat, some people set it back, some people set it upright. And if he could have hit it on the head of the cab anyway, would his injuries would have been any different? There's no testimony providing that link. And that was the basis for the district court's order.
But there's not only testimony, but there's a physical presence of a broken window.
Well, the testimony, it doesn't establish, though, the link as to our negligence. So our negligence is the failure of the seat back mechanism. And the question is whether it would have made any difference in this accident. He didn't provide any testimony that it would have made made a difference in the accident.
Can I ask one more question?
Oh, okay. Another question.
Sure. I want to ask one unrelated question.
Okay,
I think I heard you say
mm-hmm.
that you do not agree with the portion of Mead 1 where Judge Hooten wrote that the parties do not dispute that the seat in Unit 20 reclined during the accident and that Meade suffered his injuries as a result of striking the window of the truck. You don't agree with that?
I think that, no, we don't agree with that. I think the question, though, is on that record whether we disputed it, because we had the testimony. It had not been excluded. The district court hadn't ruled on our motion. In fact, the briefing on it hadn't been. So based on that record.
The record is different now.
The record is very different now, yes. Fair thank enough. You. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Rebuttal.
Thank you. Number one, with respect to whether that first order is an appealable order, we submit it is. In briefing that second motion, we stated in our brief that we were relying on all the evidence that we relied on in response to the motion to dismiss based on or to dismiss expert testimony, and then we added some additional evidence. But more importantly, it's not an advisory opinion here to rule on the admissibility of Mr. Muzzi's testimony or whether law of the case doctrine applies. That's central to what the BNSF is arguing. They're arguing is, you know, we have to show that there was injury caused by their negligence, and that negligence is their failure to maintain that vehicle, and in that there's that issue of foreseeability and notice, because that's what triggers a duty.
But their argument here seems to be different. Their argument here seems to be, even if the seat back failed and even if that was negligent, you failed to demonstrate the causal connection between the negligence and the injuries that were suffered. That seems to be their argument today.
Yeah, and I agree, yes, and to address that argument, this is no different than any other garden variety vehicle. Now, because there's an initial negligent act that then sets in force another act that we contend was caused by the railroad's negligence. And there's some questions about, and I understand they dispute whether the seat back collapsed all the way and maybe he rode up, but I would just point the court to page 38 of our initial opening brief where we outline the railroad's expert, liability expert, where she quotes the plaintiff's deposition that there was a collapse, that it went back. She references the photograph showing that collapse. Now, whether he rode up or not, that's really, I submit that's a fact question. But their own expert cites to that evidence. So there is.
Which photograph do you mean? She cites to the photograph back window was broken out.
Yes, that's what I meant. And I thank you for correcting me. It wasn't the collapse, it was the right, I misspoke there. So there is sufficient evidence here for this treating physician or foundational evidence to testify as to this collapse of the seat hitting the back caused by the negligence of the railroad and failing to maintain that pickup truck.
Go ahead.
And then, not to lose sight, I mean, I believe it's well established in under Minnesota law, but also certainly in FELA law that there's concurring causes, that there can be the negligent acts of two or more actors can combine to cause an accident, and that's exactly what we have here, and we cite to the Ayers case to that proposition. I would submit that this case is, don't make this case more than it is. This is a motor vehicle accident where there was a rear end accident, two defendants, their negligence combined, but it's there's evidence, it may be disputed, but there's evidence that there was a collapse. That collapse caused the seat then to go backwards, and then that set in process, or there was a scalp wound, and then a neck injury. And again, this all goes back to Muzzy's testimony that the railroad knew or should have known that that seat needed to be, the mechanism needed to be replaced or rebuilt.
And what is the piece of information that most strengthens that opinion by Mr. Muzzy?
It would be the repair bill of over $80,000, that the cushion had been reupholstered, cushion had been new cushion put in. There was a seat belt replaced, that this was in constant use through three shifts, where people of employees of various heights are using that mechanism. And I believe also there's a Mr. Lawler who testified that he had had problems with that seat reclining. Now,
that was one occasion, right?
Mead 1, they said that was admissible for notice purposes. Not that it reclined, but that on the issue of notice. So that's the evidence that I submit is the strongest in supporting Mr. Muzzy's opinions.
Okay. Thank you. The matter has been well argued, and it is taken under advisement.